Welcome to the podcast series from the 8th Educational Seminar on Migration 2021 entitled Migration in a Multilateral World, organized by the European Migration Network in Slovakia. You are listening to the lecture on labor migrants and migration policies in the EU, beliefs, evidence and ways forward, presented by Martin Kahanas, founder and scientific director of the Central European Labor Studies Institute based in Bratislava and professor and head of the Department of Public Policy at Central European University in Vienna. His main research interests are labor and population economics, migration, EU mobility, ethnicity, and reforms in European labor markets. He has held several advisory positions and leading roles in a number of scientific and policy projects with the World Bank, the European Commission, European Parliament, European Court of Auditors, OECD, and other international and national institutions. Enjoy the lecture.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, those in Europe, those in Slovakia, and good afternoon and good evening to those who are around the globe watching this live streaming. Thanks for the kind invitation to the IOM, and thanks for all those who are organizing this fantastic event. I have the chance to watch it, and it's really been very inspiring. What I'll do now, I'll walk you through a perspective of an economist on migration policies, migration issues. And I try to compare a little bit beliefs and narratives about the migration topic, how people tend to see it, how the media, how migration is discussed, compare it to evidence, and then walk you through a little bit of reflections on ways forward, what we can think about migration policies for the future. Now, this I already actually explained. So the first question is whether, well, we need migration and mobility in the European Union, and looking at it from the economist's perspective, what you think about is the broader demographic and economic context. Now, the demographic change, demographic transitions, they present us with, and all EU states, most EU states, with rather big and big challenges and you know, things that need to be taken care of and which are affecting the context for migration. And what this is, aging populations, scarcity of skilled labor. And that's an issue from the economic perspective, because young generations, they are those who are most risk-taking, those are most entrepreneurial, they are most innovative. And if those cohorts, those populations are shirking, relatively speaking, then there is a loss for the economy in its innovation, concerning its innovation potential. There are also consequences for this from the economic perspective, and these are financial risks in social security systems, just to mention some of those. And well, over the past few decades, we've observed that the financial and economic crisis have made the situation worse. It certainly didn't help, because not only the populations, which are the entrepreneurs, which are the future entrepreneurs and those who are willing to take some risks and who are innovators, there is growing risk aversion due to the general broader economic context. And that results in economic troubles, declines. And now, linking this to the topic of migration, we have growing negative perceptions, negative attitudes towards migration, and you can call it a Fortress Europe approach. And we know this in this circle, certainly migration refugee crises, which further fueled politicization of the migration issue and polarization along those topics which surround migration. Going back to the labor perspective, that's my main topic: labor, migration, labor markets. Why migration and mobility of labor are needed is that it's a vehicle of replacing people who are leaving labor market or filling up positions which are newly emerging, both in high and low skill parts of the market, segments of the market, that serves to fill in shortages in the market and also compensate some, if local labor force has some missing some skills, then migration and mobility of labor enables more efficiency and fills the gaps, takes care of some bottlenecks in the economy and helps to make the economy more dynamic. That's of course not a static concept. These needs, these gaps are changing across spaces, across industries, occupations over time. So, and that's the essence. Yes? That's why migration and labor mobility, flexibility of labor to respond to those changing ecosystems in the labor market are needed, is precisely because there is these are evolving and dynamic situations. We have actually surveyed experts on labor market in Europe, and there was a very dominant, prevalent view that migration is very much needed in Europe, and even more, generally more than we have. When you think about another role of migration, why migration is good, I already reflected on that a little bit. But what we see when we put this in a broader context, there are well, economic crises, there are external shocks which affect the economy, the supply side and demand side, and those include a financial crisis. I just mentioned the one that started in 2008. Then take the COVID pandemic, climate change, technological advancements. All those contribute to imbalances in labor markets and economies. And when you think from this, from the policy perspective, what policymakers can do to alleviate those asymmetric shocks that affect economies, one can think about fiscal compensation. There is one region that's growing, that's progressing, then the other one, which may have more difficulties. So you can compensate that and send fiscal transfer to the not so good, not doing so well in regions. Or you can adjust monetary policy in principle, but these are limited, especially in the European Union. These options are very limited because we have no fiscal union. The fiscal capacity at the European level is very, very, very tiny. Monetary union, again, that's EMU, so that's a limited tool. And so what remains as a major vehicle of adjustment is factor mobility, and in that context, labor mobility. So there we see that from several perspectives, migration, labor mobility may be essential for Europe to make it more economically prosperous and salient, able to deal with economic and demographic challenges. That's the first part of the presentation. Now, the question is, well, where do we stand in this respect? What kind of mobility do we have in the EU, and how should we portray that that mobility? What is the key narrative that we can say about mobility in the European Union? And well, given the context, given the demography, given the economic challenges, mobility in the European Union is generally low by international standards. If you just look at annual interstate mobility in the EU, it's about 1%. The measure is the share of population that changes residence across national borders in a year. In the US, this is 3%, in Canada, 2%, Russian Federation, 1.7%. So Europe is not doing very well in that respect. Eastern enlargements did lead to some major movement across borders in the EU. But still, migration is relatively low compared to the other regions in global peers. Looking at some global peers, you see that migration in Europe is not very high. Well, this is a mess of diagrams, but it shows you that there is quite. These are migration flows across countries in Europe, and there are some other additional countries like Australia, United States, etc. What it tells you is that there is quite some variation in mobility, in flows of migrants. There are periods of higher migration, lower migration, and so it's an evolving concept. And in several countries, migration has been over the past 10, 20 years increasing. Others have experienced different waves. Generally, you don't need to look at individual countries, but the point here is that there is quite some variation in migration. Some of that reflects EU enlargement, some of that reflects economic crises and the different opportunities in the sending and receiving countries. So that's a concept where migration is, as we know very well, migration is changing over time and across countries differently. Now, The one question is, how should we see migrants? Is this mainly low-skilled migration, high-skilled migration? Where do migrants position themselves in the labor market? And these diagrams may look a bit difficult to read, but they're actually very simple. What you see on the left panel, this is intra-EU migration, and the dots represent European Union member states. So each dot is a European Union member state, and the dots, all those dots which are about the diagonal line, for those countries, immigrants from the European Union in the left panel, they are the share of tertiary educated people among immigrants is higher than among natives. Okay, so one could say that in all those countries which are above the line, immigrants are more educated than the natives. Similarly, in the right panel, this is non-EU migration, so these are people in European Union member states who have come to those countries, who reside in those countries, but they come outside of the European Union. If the dot representing a country, European Union member state, is above the line, that means that in that country, immigrants are more skilled, more educated than the natives. And what you see is that, well, maybe contrary to many views, migrants are relatively educated. At least there is quite some, there is some variation, but migrants are relatively well-educated in many countries, often more than natives, sometimes less, and intra-EU migrants are perhaps somewhat more educated than immigrants coming from outside Europe. Now, that's the first point. Now, the second point, and it's a similar logic here, but we look at activity, at participation. Yes, participation is attachment, reflects attachment to the labor market, whether migrants either work or want to work, even if they don't have a job, but they want to work and are available for employment. And what you see again, this is the same logic in the diagram. What you see that all the dots are far up and right. I intentionally started the diagram with 0.00, so that you see that immigrants and natives they are rather high in the diagram, so they all are rather attached to the labor market. But what you also see, these are populations 20 to 59 years of age. What you see is that mostly migrants want to work. They seek employment. For the migrants from within the European Union, they are even perhaps slightly in more countries. They are more attached to the labor market than the natives, than the other way around. For non-EU immigrants, the situation is slightly reversed. In more countries, there is somewhat less lower activity rate of immigrants than the natives, but still very high, relatively high. All these dots are far in the, you know, top left, top right corner of the diagram. So, relatively educated with some variation, attached to the labor market, want to work. Now he's a bit of a problem. Not always successful in finding employment. What you see is that for EU migrants, unemployment rates are generally, the dots are above the line. So that means that unemployment rate for immigrants is somewhat higher than for the natives. So there is some friction there. For non-EU immigrants, that is even higher to a large degree. What you see is that immigrants are fewer opportunities in the labor market to find employment than native workers. And then there is another issue, which is that even if they find, this is the last, I will not torture you anymore with diagrams like this. So this is the last one, I promise. When you look at this one, that's we're looking at the skill level of occupation that migrants are able to secure. And what you see is that most of the dots, not always, but most of the dots are below the line. That means that immigrants, even if they are relatively educated, they want to work, they have difficulties finding employment. And now the last point is that even if they find employment, find a job, they tend to find a job which is less skilled than that of the lower level of skill as required than for the natives. Now, that indicates that migrants are relatively educated, there's some variation, but not too different from natives. They're active, they seek employment, but then there's brainwaves because they don't than to not find a job. There may be discrimination, there may be other barriers in the labor market. Even if they find a job, it may be of lower skill level. And so we could call this brain waste. That's inefficient, that's unequal, and often it's also unjust. Now, important note that is that in those diagrams, which I showed to you, I bundled migrants into two categories, EU and non-EU. But we do know that there is variation across immigrant groups. Even if you look at the within EU migration, you have immigrants from new member states, from the more recent member states, from the so-called old member states, and you see differences there. For many reasons. For example, years since migration, immigrants from new members there are more recent. They have less years, less time to adjust to the conditions of the receiving labor markets. You can also see variation for migrants from outside the EU, different groups of immigrants from outside the EU. Generally, there is variation across source countries and regions, across destinations, which you could see a little bit years since migration, gender, and other factors. But okay, so that's one narrative that you can base on evidence, on data that is available. But the prevalent narratives are actually different, and they relate to other aspects of labor market integration of immigrants, because what you often hear is immigrants taking our jobs, lowering our wages, the welfare tourists abusing our welfare systems, and similar ones. Now, what about evidence? My job here is to walk you through a bit of evidence, of course, not all, but at least give you a flavor how this looks like when we look at data. So what are the effects of mobility in the EU? Let's start with the first one. Do migrants take our jobs? Well, what actually turns out is that rather they help to create new jobs. Do they lower our wages? Well, not really. That's not the evidence we find. The first evidence was from the US by David Card. There's a famous Mariel Boatlift experiment from the academic perspective, research perspective. You could see this as a natural experiment where many migrants were shipped to refugees, were sailed to Miami, and we couldn't see, at least according to David Carr, that unemployment would be going up or wages down. But that was just the first evidence. But then there is a huge number of papers, a large number of papers, which look at migration effects on wages, on employment. And what you see, for example, there is the postal migrant mobility that we studied, and we really couldn't find much evidence of negative effects. It's not that it never happens. There are a few papers which, in certain specific, usually narrowly defined contexts, show some negative effects. But generally, overall, for receiving countries, we do not find negative impacts on unemployment rates or wages in the economy of immigration. Amélie Constant summarizes this evidence, and based on evidence, she claims that actually in the medium to long run, there is job creation rather than job stealing or negative effects on wages. With my colleague Mariola Pytlíková, we looked at some macroeconomic impacts of migration. What we found, so we look at migration flows from new member states to the old member states. We look at migration flows from the Eastern Partnership countries into the European Union. And what we found was that post-enlargement intra-EU migration had positive effects on GDP. Well, that's not so surprising, because more heads and skilled and brains, they generate more GDP, but also GDP per capita. Yes, GDP per capita and employment rate. Some negative effects on output per worker. So many of these effects were rather synergies, and some of them went to capital owners. But generally speaking, there were relatively positive effects of migration from new member states to the old member states on the receiving countries' economies. The results were more mixed for migration from the Eastern Partnership countries. Our interpretation was that there was more recent, in some of that migration was more recent and more restricted, so migrants could not realize their full potential because they could not go into, you know, most efficiently respond to labor shortages and to maximize their economic potential in receiving labor markets. Now, one reason why we think that migration is beneficial for the economy, and I've been hinting at it already, but one reason why we are probably finding these positive effects at the macro level is that migrants indeed goes to those sectors, occupations, industries, countries where there is skill shortage, where their skills, their skilled hands and qualified labor are most needed. Now, that's however a question. Is this the case? Is this the case that migrants grease the wheels of receiving countries' economies and they fill in the bottlenecks and that make economies more efficient? And so, well, yes, that's what we find actually in a series of papers. This diagram is just a very simple, very, very simple representation of that. What you see is that those countries to the right, these are those where labor shortages increased, and countries in the higher, the higher the country is, those are the countries where more migrants went to. And so you see that all countries are kind of aligned in the upper right corner and the lower left corner, meaning that those countries where labor shortages increase are exactly those countries where more migrants went to. And vice versa. If labor shortages did not increase or decrease, then those countries received fewer migrants. That's a very, very rudimentary, not even evidence, that's just some kind of diagram which shows this at a very, very aggregated level. But we actually looked at Europe, we split Europe, we partitioned Europe, the European labor market, into occupations, industries, skill levels, etc., etc. Looked at subgroups of countries, and these were, I don't think I exaggerated, if say hundreds of tests, and in most of those tests we found that migrants are either equally flexibly responding to labor shortages or more. In many cases, very many cases, they were more responsive to labor shortages than natives. So indeed, that would be indication that they are greasing the wheels of European economies. Now, there is this possibility, which some commentators propose, is that migrants not only grease the wheels of economies, go to explore those economic opportunities that arise in labor markets where there are shortages, which is nice, but that they're actually welfare shoppers, so they go to those countries or those regions which offer more generous welfare. Well, I'm not sure to what extent that will matter, but it certainly does matter for the public perception and for the debate about migration. So we looked at it, several colleagues, including us, we looked at this question. And Borjas in the US, he found some evidence of a small but marginally significant, statistically significant effect that this may be the case for migration among US states. Well, then there were a couple of studies for Europe which show small significant effects, statistically significant, but rather small effects. Well, we look at this question and we accounted for the possibility that actually it's not that migrants go to countries which offer more generous welfare, but it may be the other way around, when more migrants go to a country, then welfare generosity increases. And surprisingly, there is evidence for that, but we explicitly accounted for that effect and found no effects of welfare generosity on migration flows in Europe. More recently, in very nice, very neat research designs, colleagues in Austria and Denmark, they found that there may be this effect for refugees and asylees. So it's very recent evidence, so we'll have to look at it more closely, but these are very neat studies and they actually do show that there may be some such effect in Austria and Denmark, that refugees and asylees actually are attracted by into more generous regions, welfare generous regions in the respective countries. We also find well, rather recently with my colleague Martin Guzzi, that actually accessibility of welfare, not the general generosity, but actually the ability of migrants to access welfare does have some positive effect on migration flows in Europe. So not very big, but statistically significant. Well, how that matters, I don't know exactly, but because, for example, also migrants contribute to public finances and they have positive effects on the economy. But it's important to understand also this aspect and in the context of migration debate and how migration is portrayed in the public, in the media, and how it's perceived, because that's important, and that's why that was my last point in the conclusions, why that matters. We also find, and this is another aspect in those studies which we looked at very, very carefully, whether policies matters. So we looked at different policy contexts across Europe. That Europe is fantastic in that respect, because Europe is relatively homogeneous economically, but it has different policies. And there are different policies compared to, say, the US, where US states are more homogeneous in terms of this bigger macro policies. So there are some variation. We explored that variation. We looked at whether policies matter for various aspects of what I've been discussing. And here I just take you through one of such aspects, and that's the responsiveness of migrants to skill shortages, whether to what extent immigrants are greasing the wheels of receiving countries' economies. And we found that responsiveness, that flexibility of immigrants, is the highest in member states with lower GDP, relatively speaking, higher levels of immigration from outside the EU, and more open, and well, that's relevant, more open immigration and integration policies. That's not surprising, because the more open and welcoming and integration and immigration policies are, the more flexibly migrants can respond to economic opportunities and maximize their potential. So it kind of makes sense intuitively, but we also show this in data. This is based on data, and we show this in data. There is also some evidence that those markets that are barriers to citizenship acquisition or family reunification, in those countries, also migrants were more flexibly responding to skill shortages, which may be again not so surprising. That because those are citizenship and families, they are somehow restricting possibilities. Family tied migrants that may those for those there may be it may be more difficult to move across regions, countries, etc. What we also showed is that a higher welfare spending, a relatively more generous welfare, was exerting some lock-in effect, reducing flexibility of how migrants were responding to labor shortages. But when you look at welfare, different welfare states, we didn't find evidence that, say, Scandinavian welfare model would be less conducive than, say, Mediterranean or continental or liberal. There were no such effects that we could find in the data. Anyhow, bottom line, policies do matter, and that's good, because then these are opportunities to explore and exploit for the benefit for the public good. Summary of this part, generally, we don't find evidence that immigrants would be taking jobs or lowering wages. There is rather evidence of job creation over a longer time period. We see some positive macroeconomic effects, and these are probably to some extent due to migrants greasing the economic wheels in destination countries. Not much welfare shopping, some for refugees and asylum seekers, and institutional and policy contexts do matter. So where is the problem? Now taking us to the more of a policy perspective. How we read the policy ecosystem context in Europe. It's rather non-transparent, very costly, and very ill-designed immigration procedures from the perspective of what would be desirable for labor migrants. Institutional barriers abound in legal frameworks, rather limited access to institutions, markets, services, public services. One big issue is poor transferability of qualifications, formal qualifications, recognition of qualifications. There are additional barriers to labor market inclusion. When we ask migrants, they very often pointed those as the single most important ones: discrimination, negative attitudes, lack of information about labor market opportunities, and additional barriers which make the lives of immigrants more difficult. From the economic perspective, they limit the opportunities for migrants, and that is detrimental for receiving economies, receiving labor markets, because the potential of immigrants is not realized to the full possible extent, then there are that's not efficient, and there is waste of human resources in that process. Plus, of course, there is the equality concern and social justice concern as well attached to this. Now, additionally, there is poor transferability of social rights, pensions, which again limits the potentials and opportunities for immigrants, lack of provisions for tight migrants, and that's another limitation that's already reflected on a little bit when there are tight migrants whose opportunities are not very good, that limits the flexibility of migrants to respond to economic and social and other political opportunities. And that is detrimental for themselves, but also for the receiving economies and societies. Lack of harmonization across the EU. On paper, very often things look good, but when you live through some of those regulations, you realize how much time they take, how complex they are, how limiting they are. There is a huge gap between perceptions and evidence, as you probably hopefully see also from this presentation, that when you think about how migration is portrayed and perceived and what actual hard data tell us, then there is quite a gap, and this is partly fuels and both at the same time a politicization of the migration issue. So generally speaking, we want positive outcomes, at least we potentially want positive outcomes from migration, but very often we provide not very conducive framework for immigrant integration and labor market and social integration of immigrants. A little bit on migration policy options. That's a huge topic, a very, very large, but it's more of a flavor of what we are thinking about, what I'm sure you're thinking about, from the economic perspective, when you think about selecting economic migrants, when you think about labor migration, there are two basic concepts. One is more demand-driven and employer-led immigration, where the idea is that if there is a job for you, if you find a job if there is demand for your skill, you should do well in the receiving labor market. Example, there is shortage of nurses, so the idea would be, okay, let's allow a few nurses come into your country. And there is a different perspective. There is the alternative view is that, when you think about immigration, and this is what we also see in the data, that the approach is more proactive, whereas the former one was more reactive. There is some demand, we respond to the demand. The more proactive, human capital focused approach would be to say that, look, let's attract immigration which is skilled, which is immigration of highly employable people, And they may be nurses, they may be fresh graduates, they may be entrepreneurs, they may be whoever. We don't know actually. Maybe we even don't know. Maybe we even cannot measure whether nurses or it's not nurses or doctors or it's shop assistants are in high demand. Maybe we even can't measure that properly. But we know that skilled, qualified workers will tend to do well. And so the approach is more to identify those highly employable people and attract immigration of those. An example would be points-based systems, which have been applied in several countries, as I'm sure you know. I just skip this because that's already something that we discussed. There are a few variables that you look at in the second approach, the approach where you try to attract and facilitate immigration of workers which are highly employable. And you can think of sort of variables which appear in many of those point systems which are very often used. Let's call them tier one. Education. This could be years of education, degrees, academic rank, higher ranked degrees. Then another variable which is very often used is work experience. Age, often being young is rewarded, language abilities, and experience in the host country. Tier two variables are whether you have a job offer in some countries been used. Shortage occupation, and you already see that it's kind of combining two approaches, and that will be a point I'll make in a second. Partner characteristics, if there are tight migrants, spouses, children potentially. Previous or potential prospective earnings as a proxy for skill. Relatives in the host country, settlement stipulation when you go to less dynamic areas or more dynamic areas, yes, that may be preferred. And if you have an investment funds for to invest in the country to create jobs or funds for retirement, that may be rewarded. Now, one question is whether these systems work. And the first question you ask is actually, do they achieve the stated objectives? Like, do they say increase educational attainment of immigrants? And evidence is yes, they do. So they do increase the employability, potential employability of immigrants. They seem to lead to higher earnings of those immigrants who have arrived through points-based system compared to immigrants which come through different channels. But the gap diminishes over time, so that advantage is temporary. And same for participation and employability. We see that those migrants who have arrived through points-based systems, they have higher participation rate, higher employment, but the gap also diminishes over time, so the benefits seem to be also temporary. And that's not so surprising, because after some time, immigrants become more like natives, and then differences tend to disappear. Very briefly, so 4 minutes, so very briefly, this is one of the last slides. Pros and cons of points-based system. Pros, binding constraint, projection of being able to control migration, clear objectives, rather transparent, providing a vision, what's the vision and objective. Equality of immigration from the labor market perspective tends to go up administratively, relatively streamlined. Among the cons that, you know, it's costly and comprehensive evaluation may be needed, monitoring. This is a fundamental problem. Only observable characteristics count, and so you don't have a good, sometimes you may not have a good measure of employability and potential skill levels of migrants, as opposed to formal education, but the actual skill may be different. Maybe not flexible enough when there are changes in the labor market, when there are economic shocks. And with regard to sending countries, the signaling that such systems provide is that they may divert resources, they may motivate many more people in sending countries to attain certain level of education, etc., but then be overeducated, stay in their countries, and some resources may be wasted in the sending countries. One idea could be, let's be smart, let's take best of the two worlds, and that's already been applied in some countries. Let's have a hybrid system which is points a base, but then there is some reward for having a job offer in the receiving country, and that the hope would be that in that case you really are well positioned to enter the market and be successful. And to conclude, what we find, when you look at evidence, data that we have available, we see that migration makes the economy more efficient, more salient, facilitates adjustment in times of economic shocks, economic transitions, all kinds of crises and challenges that economies are facing. Migration makes them more immigrants make economies and societies more salient. Generally, there are neutral to positive effects on the economy, employment, wages. So fears of negative adverse economic effects are mostly not justified. Policies do matter. That's very important. We do show that policies do matter. And so they require attention and proper design, proper care of policy world. There are several migration options, migration policy options, but clearly they must be rather based on evidence than thoughts, beliefs, which are not justified by when we look at the data. And what is the bottom line, and I already reflected on that a little bit, at least parts of it, but here I'm connecting the dots a bit. We must work hard to avoid a vicious circle of negative perceptions, attitudes, or narratives, which then, through voters' behavior, voters' preferences, lead to adverse policies, through populism, etc. They lead to adverse policies, which then, if they're adverse policy, the assumption or the thought, the thinking may be that this results in some problematic outcomes, not ideal outcomes, substandard outcomes, and that feeds back into negative perceptions, attitudes, which are somehow validated, and that fuels the vicious circle where policymakers should have strong incentives, and that's their duty to actually avoid this situation. Thank you very, very much.
This lecture was part of the EMN educational seminar on migration entitled Migration in the Multilateral World. The seminar is organized by the International Organization for Migration Slovakia as the coordinator of the Slovak EMN National Contact Point. This activity is funded by the European Union and co-funded by the Ministry of Interior of the Slovak Republic. Thank you for listening.